What's up, you guys? I'm Haley.
And I'm Andrea.
And this is Inhuman, a true crime podcast.
Yes.
If you're listening to this the day it comes out, if you're not, hope you had a good Halloween. And I hope everybody had a like super fun, safe, spooky Halloween weekend.
Yeah. And if you don't celebrate, that's okay. Hope you had a great weekend and a great week.
Yes, absolutely. Today we are going to kind of conclude our coverage of horror film related crimes by covering what is known as the Scream Murder. AKA the murder of Cassie Jo Stoddart.
Okay.
And this has been a highly, highly requested case from you guys for years, pretty much since we started the podcast. And I know it's one that a lot of people have heard of or are curious about. And so I decided it's finally time to cover it. So with that, let's get into it.
Okay.
On September 22nd, 2006, 16-year-old Cassie Jo Stoddart was house-sitting for her aunt and uncle, Allison and Frank Contreras, in Pocatello, Idaho. The house that she was at was on Whispering Cliffs Drive, and it was just a few miles away from her own home. And she was born and raised in Pocatello. She had been there her whole life. It's a relatively small town, or a smaller town.
Okay.
So, you know, everybody knows everybody. Kind of like, you know, not a super unsafe area. Like, it was just that kind of small town Idaho vibes.
Yeah.
Cassie was known as friendly and responsible. And the sheriff later said, quote, "She didn't do anything but be friends with somebody else and just about everybody." So I feel like that kind of describes her. Like, she, you know, was very responsible, very trustworthy. Obviously, her aunt and uncle trusted her, 16 years old, to house it and take care of their pets. And she was just really friendly, and a lot of people knew her and were friends with her.
Yeah, like she never met a stranger kind of thing. Yeah,
exactly. So she got to the house around 5 p.m. that evening. It was a Friday evening, so her mom took her there after school. And at around 6 p.m., her boyfriend, 16-year-old Matt Beckham, came over to hang out and watch movies. And this was something that was, she had asked her aunt and uncle if it was okay. So it's not
she's like sneaking.
Yeah. And they knew that the boyfriend was going to come over. They were totally fine with it. Like,
That just shows how much they trusted her, how like, dependable and trustworthy she must have
and
been.
How responsible she was to ask and know that they might say no. Like, it's like once you ask, then if they say no, you really can't do it.
Yeah.
So she clearly was like very responsible, very just a really good kid, like a really good, I can't think of the word that's not responsible. There's another word I'm looking for. But anyway, she's a good kid. So he came over around 6, and then a bit later, around 8:30, he invited two of his friends, 16-year-old Tori Adamchik, who in turn invited his friend, 16-year-old Brian Draper.
Mm-hmm.
This seemed like an innocent movie hangout night, but what Tori and Brian were planning was more sinister than anyone could have imagined.
Oh my gosh.
Tori and Brian spent about 2 hours at the house that evening, and when they first got there, Cassie gave them a tour of the house, and then the four went into the living room and began watching the movie Kill Bill Volume 2.
Nice.
Yeah. At some point, Brian slipped down to the basement to unlock the door, and this was just the beginning of him and Tori's plan.
Hmm.
Now, these two boys were obsessed with horror films, and they were supposedly working on one of their own. They had a death list that contained the names of several of their classmates and friends that they wanted to kill, including Cassie.
So sick.
And they decided to take the opportunity of Cassie being alone at this house to act out their dream. So the boys were only there for less than 2 hours and didn't even stay for the whole movie. So that was kind of weird. And then they left saying they were going to watch a movie at the local theater. So not only did they like leave before the movie was over, but they're like, oh, we're just going to go watch another movie.
Yeah.
Around that same time, Cassie's mom, Anna, called her to check in. And Cassie was like, yep, everything's going well. We're all good here. Not long after leaving the house, Tori and Brian returned, this time parking down the street. They put on dark clothing, gloves, and white painted masks. They snuck back into the house through the door that Brian had unlocked earlier in the night, and they hid in the basement while Matt and Cassie were watching TV in the living room.
And her boyfriend was just like completely unaware?
Yep, both of them completely unaware.
Wow. Those are his friends.
Yeah. I don't think they were like super close friends, but they definitely were like friendly enough that he invited Tori over. Yeah. I think he was closer with Tori, and then Tori was close with Brian.
But
they were friendly enough that he invited Tori to come hang out.
And obviously, like, we don't know everything about every single person we're friends with. So, you know, you might think, oh, this person's a decent person, a good person. They would never do something like this. And then really they have it in them to do exactly that.
Yep. Sometimes when I don't feel like reading or watching TV, I just want to sit back and play a fun game on my phone. And I recently started playing June's Journey, and when I tell you I'm loving it, that is an understatement. I'm already on the fourth chapter, and I've only been playing for a few days. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game, and I love it because it brings out my inner detective. You play as June Parker in the 1920s trying to solve her sister's murder. It's so much fun to travel the world of the 20s looking for clues that are indicating that June's family has some dark secrets. You also get to create and decorate your own estate island, which I loved because it made me feel really fancy and important. In my last chapter, I discovered a big family secret and there was an unexpected death, but I won't ruin it for you. You can discover your inner detective and play yourself by downloading June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. You can find the link to download June's Journey for free in the show notes of this episode. So Tori and Brian were hiding down in the basement, and they began trying to lure Cassie and Matt down by making loud noises. And they said later that they wanted to like scare them and lure them to them so that they could kill them. But this didn't work, so they found the circuit breaker in the basement and cut off power to the house to try to get them again to come down to the basement to turn the power back on.
Right.
Cassie and Matt were definitely freaked out because they were now in the dark, but they didn't go down to the basement.
Yeah, not everyone knows to do that, especially like a teenager. Yeah.
I mean, I probably wouldn't know how to do that either.
I would just go down there and
kill me for that.
Flick them all and just hope for the best.
Yeah. I would honestly probably just sit there in the dark and like
call
the flashlight.
Help me.
Yeah.
I'm a poor defenseless woman. Help.
Even scarier, the Contreras family dog that Cassie was house sitting was barking at the basement stairs, growling at what seemed to be nothing, but in reality the dog was reacting to the boys down there.
Wow, that dog. Wow, good job. But geez,
I know. And that just freaked Cassie and Matt out even more. They're like, we don't know what's down there, we're not going to go down there.
Yeah, because you're thinking like, does the dog see a ghost or hear a ghost or something? Because you're not like thinking these people left and then re-entered the home without you knowing.
Exactly. No, you have no clue.
Yeah.
And because they weren't going down to the basement, Tori and Brian were kind of like messing with the lights, turning them on and off, like trying to get them to come down to figure out what was going on.
What the fuck?
Yeah. But they didn't, and Matt knew that Cassie was uneasy about being alone at the house, especially with all this going on. So he called his mom to ask if he could spend the night at the house with Cassie. But unfortunately, his mom said no, which is totally makes sense.
Understandable.
They're 16 years old.
Yeah,
you don't want to like let them stay together. And she did offer to have Cassie come to their house and spend the night at their house so that she wouldn't be alone.
Yeah.
But being the responsible girl that she was, Cassie was like, nope, it's my job to stay at the house and take care of the pets, so I'll be fine. Around 10:30 p.m., Matt's mom picked him up and Cassie was now alone. On the way home, Matt called Tori, who, unbeknownst to him, was in the basement of the house. Matt had been hoping to meet up with Tori and Brian later that night, but he could barely hear what Tori was saying when he answered because Tori was, like, whispering. But he just assumed that they were at the movie theater, as they said they were going to do. So he just hung up and gave up on, like, trying to see them.
So was he planning to, like, sneak out or something?
I don't think so. I think he was, like, genuinely going to hang out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Shortly after this, Brian and Tori began terrorizing Cassie. They cut the circuit breaker again, once again hoping she would come down to the basement to turn the lights back on so that they could attack her. But she didn't. She remained upstairs. She stayed on the sofa, hoping to fall asleep and wake up in the morning light. Cassie was asleep on the couch when the boys snuck up the stairs. They were tired of waiting for her to come down. They were armed with knives that they bought from a pawn shop. Once upstairs, Brian began slamming a closet door, hoping to scare Cassie and bring her to them. They were basically taunting her.
Yeah.
But she didn't approach them, so they finally went to her. And that's when they attacked her. The two boys stabbed her 30 times in the chest, neck, back, and abdomen. 12 of the stab wounds were potentially fatal.
Oh my God.
Idaho Police Captain John Gansky later said, quote, "From looking at the scene, it was clear that Cassie put up an extreme fight. She fought for her life."
That poor girl.
I know.
And to see people that you know doing that.
Coming at you. Yeah.
Wow.
After stabbing Cassie to death, Tori and Brian fled the scene. The next day, Matt Beckham, Cassie's boyfriend, actually hung out with Tori. He was trying to reach Cassie by phone several times throughout the day. I think he ended up calling her like 15 times. All while he was hanging out with her killer, unknowingly.
God, I bet when he found that out, that ate him up.
Yeah. He had actually tried to call Cassie around 12:30 a.m. a couple hours after he left to check on her, but she didn't pick up. But he just figured she was probably asleep, so he wasn't too worried. And then the next day he called her several times and she failed to answer and he was becoming concerned, but unfortunately he wasn't able to go over to check on her. Some reports say that he had actually asked Tori, hey, can we go check on Cassie? But Tori was like, oh, my car's out of gas. We can't go anywhere.
That's convenient.
Yeah. But he probably just thought she's busy. She's house sitting. Like, you know, even though he was concerned, it wasn't concern enough to like call the police or anything.
Right.
Anna also tried contacting her daughter several times throughout the day, but Cassie wasn't responding. But again, she knew Cassie was a responsible adult and she didn't have any real reason to worry. And also, this is 2006. So yes, cell phones are a thing, but it's not like it is today where it's like you get instant responses.
Like constant
always.
Texting all day long. Like,
yeah. So yeah. She was concerned, but didn't have enough reason to like go and check on her.
And the aunt and uncle, they were gone for the whole weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Cassie's body was not found until 2 days later. On September 24th, the Contreras family returned to their home and found the horrific scene.
Oh my gosh.
Cassie's 13-year-old cousin was the one to find her body.
Oh my goodness.
Investigators found that Cassie's body was covered in stab wounds and deep lacerations. As I said earlier, she had 30 stab wounds, 12 of which were determined to be potentially fatal. Thankfully, it didn't take long for investigators to question Tori and Brian. They first spoke with Matt because boyfriend's always the first suspect, and they quickly found out that he was the last one with her that night, or so they thought at the time.
Right.
Matt passed a polygraph test, and they also had no real evidence to connect him.
Yeah, like no motive, no...
Right. So they were able to rule him out pretty quickly. He was also really cooperative, telling them everything that had happened the night of the 22nd. And so that's when they got the story of Tori and Brian being there as well. So he told them all about how they heard all the strange sounds, the power going out, and all of that. And so because Tori and Brian were also some of the last people to see Cassie, police interviewed them. Initially, Tori told detectives that he and Brian had gone to the house at about 8:30 that night to attend what they thought was going to be a party. But then he said when the party never happened, they left the house to go watch a movie at the local theater. His story immediately had holes. When detectives probed him about the movie that he saw that night, which is a totally normal question to confirm his alibi, he could not remember a single thing about the movie. He couldn't recall the plot or even details about the theater.
That's big fat red flag.
Yeah, like it had been less than 48 hours.
That just shows you how like idiotic they were. Like,
yeah.
Like, you couldn't that and not plan it better. I mean, I'm glad, obviously. Like,
yeah,
that's why they got caught. But it's like, you're young, you're immature, you're stupid. You have no fucking idea what you're doing. You don't need to be fucking doing this shit.
Yep.
And now look at you. You got yourself caught, rightfully so.
Yep. So investigators really didn't believe his story right from the start. So they continued questioning the story, and they even spoke to a classmate who was working at the theater the night of the murder. And that classmate told investigators that he hadn't seen either of them that evening. Brian also couldn't remember any details about the movie they allegedly saw. So again, they were suspicious of both of them.
Yeah.
Police continued questioning both Brian and Tori, and eventually they began to break down. So police, knowing that their story was about being at the movie theater was not true, they confronted them about that. And that's when Brian said, oh, we weren't actually at the theater. We lied. But we only lied because we were out breaking into cars and we didn't want to get in trouble.
Okay.
3 days after Cassie's body was found, Brian Draper was brought in for his third interview. At this point, investigators told him we're going to do a polygraph test. And before they could do that, he would admit to what he'd done.
He cracked.
Yep. And his parents were there with him. They, you know, said we're going to do a polygraph test. So it was probably all the pressure. And he was like, we're going to get caught. So he just admitted to it.
Yeah. Good.
While Brian had initially denied his involvement, he changed his story to say that he was in the room, but did not stab her. But under more pressure, he changed his story again and claimed he did stab her, but only under instructions from Tori.
Because you have no brain and you're a puppet? Like,
yeah, apparently. Yeah. And then he also claimed that Tori had threatened to kill him if Brian went to the police. After this, Brian led authorities to Black Rock Canyon, where the boys had gone after the murder to stash a bunch of evidence. So this included their clothes from the night of the murder, several knives, latex gloves, a red and white mask that is very creepy, and I will post a picture of that.
I saw it. I was looking because I wanted to see, because I know this case, but I was like wanting a refresher of who Cassie was.
Yeah.
And yeah, I saw the mask.
Very creepy.
Very creepy indeed.
They also found the most damning piece of evidence, the infamous videotape. They had tried to burn this tape, but it was unsuccessful.
Why tape it to burn it?
I know. Probably because they realized what they had done and they were like, oh shit.
Yeah.
If you've heard anything about this case or know anything about this case, you've probably at least heard of this tape. So I'm going to walk you through all of the different recordings, and I'll play some audio, I'll read some transcripts, and you'll get a sense of what's on this tape.
All right.
So first of all, there is footage of Tori and Brian talking about their plan the night before the murder. They had documented their plan, including conversations about their obsession with horror movies and serial killers. So this video was filmed on September 21st, 2006, around 8 p.m., so the night before the murder.
Right.
And the boys are discussing their plans. So Tori says, tonight is the night. I feel like I want to kill someone. Brian says, there should be no law against killing people. I know it's a wrong thing, but hell, you restrict somebody from it, they're going to want it more.
That is not true. Mm-hmm. That is not true. Unless you have something very psychologically wrong with you.
Mm-hmm. So then they start talking about their plan for the night. Brian, we're going to go to Cassie and Matt's house. Tori, interrupting, it's Cassie's house. Matt is there. Brian, we're going to knock on the door. We'll see who's there. We'll see if the parents are home or not. If they're home alone, we'll leave and come back in about 10 minutes. We'll sneak in through the door because chances are they're in Cassie's room. We'll sneak through the front door. We'll make a noise outside and Matt will come out and investigate. We'll kill him and it'll scare the shit out of Cassie. Okay? Tori, sounds like fun.
So they were initially planning to kill them both.
Correct.
But
they were planning to kill both of them, but because Matt left. Oh. No, it was just that Matt left. They had been trying to like lure them down and they were going to kill both of them. And then Matt eventually left before they like got up the courage, I guess, to go and attack them.
Yeah.
It also could have been that they were like afraid of Matt being able to overpower them or.
Yeah.
You know, that could have been the case.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't know, but yeah. They then talk about their victim.
We found our victim and sad as it may be, she's our friend. But you know what? We all have to make sacrifices. Our first victim is going to be Cassie, Stoddard, and her friends.
God, turn your brights off, asshole.
We'll find out if she has friends over. She's going to be alone in a big, dark house out in the middle of nowhere. How perfect can you get? I mean, like, holy shit, dude.
I'm horny just thinking about it.
Hell yeah. So we're gonna fucking kill her and her friends, and we're gonna keep moving on. I heard some news about Kirsten. She's gonna be home alone from 6 to 7. So we might kill her, then drive over to Cassie's thing, and scare the shit out of them, then kill them one by fucking one. Hell yeah.
Why one by one? Why can't it be a slaughterhouse?
2 by 2 and 3 by 3? Because we got to keep it classy. So yeah,
classy.
It's going to be extra fun.
You're evil.
Yes, I am. So are you.
No, evil is an expression of God. That was another test you failed.
Evil is not an expression of God.
Yes, it is.
It's bullshit. You know it.
Evil, of origin, is a follower of fucking Satan.
There is no
Satan.
Satan.
Real? Then shut
then,
up.
Then how are we supposed to express ourselves?
Good and bad.
We're bad.
We are bad.
That sounds so shitty.
We're evil. That sounds even shittier.
We're not, okay? They were sick psychopaths that they get pleasure of killing other people.
That sounds good, baby.
We're gonna go down in history. We're gonna be just like Scream, except real life terms.
We're gonna be murderers.
Like, let's see, Ted Bundy. Like the Hillside Strangler.
No.
The Zodiac Killer.
Those people are more amateurs compared to what we're gonna be. We're gonna be more of higher sources of Ed Gold.
Gene.
Well,
except we're not that sick and that twisted.
Oh, do you know what Ed Gene's words were?
What?
Saw a girl walking down the street, right?
Yeah.
Two questions came to his head. I could take her out, have a nice time with her.
The killer?
And show her a good
her
time,
alive.
Charm the pants off her, or I wonder what her head would look like on a stick.
Holy shit.
That's creepy, huh?
Holy shit. Murder is power, murder is freedom. Goodbye.
So the one who said, I'm horny just thinking about it, that was Tori.
That is so fucking foul.
Right?
Like.
So sick.
And to say, okay, so you're trying to be like the Scream movie. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like their motivation, I guess, for like recording it and,
right,
you know, saying all this stuff on film and comparing themselves to these like infamous killers, which is hilarious because number one, why would you want to be that? But also number two, you're not.
Yeah, no,
you're not
at all.
I mean, gosh, you lasted what, 2 days?
Yeah.
And then you were caught. So no, honey, you're.
No.
Just no. All the way around. Just no.
No, it's so sick. Like, and also they mispronounced Ed Gein's name.
I know.
First of all, they didn't even know the name, and then they mispronounced it.
Yeah.
And if you didn't know, Scream is a movie, a horror film about several teenagers being murdered by a serial killer.
It's like the first real, it's not the first real, but it's like the first like thriller slasher, I feel like. Because before that, it was like gory horror, like intense. And this was like very psychological. And...
yeah, more thriller.
Yeah.
And if you listen to our episode on the Gainesville Ripper, you'll already know this. But it was written by screenwriter Kevin Williamson, who actually went on to write a lot of other horror films. But at the time he wrote Scream, he was a struggling writer. And then he was inspired to write Scream in part after seeing a news program on the Gainesville Ripper.
Right.
So it really was kind of like one of the first ones like this.
Yeah. And it's like a cult classic. If you haven't seen it and you like thrillers or horror movies, like you have to see at least the first one.
Yeah. I will not be watching it, but we actually watched Scary Movie yesterday. Oh, the like spoof of the Scary Movies.
That one's good too. But only
that's about all I can watch.
Yeah.
But yeah, in the tapes, Brian says we're going to be just like Scream, except in real life terms. So they clearly, like, this was their inspiration, as you will.
And then it gets called that, and I hate that because...
yeah.
Ugh.
So, yeah. And then at the end, they say, murder is power, murder is freedom. So again, that just shows what state of mind they're in.
They're full of it. I feel like they're just both full of it. They're trying to impress one another. Yes, they do end up killing somebody, but I feel like it's almost like they were peer pressuring each other, you know?
It kind of does seem like that. And they kind of were like both trying to be so cool.
Over the top. And
yeah.
Like, oh, we're murderers. Like, wow, we're so fucking cool. No.
Yeah. At one point in the tape, they also talk about being inspired by the Columbine school shooters.
Oh my God.
And saying that they like admired them. So,
no.
Yeah.
This all just cowards. Kind of... cowards, 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 yeah. Cowards.
Yeah.
All of it.
This tape also included footage of their school day on the day of the murders. And Brian is walking through the halls. And at one point, they actually walk up to Cassie, who's at her locker, and like talk to her. And this was after they had talked about Cassie being their murder victim. So
yeah, because it was all part of the ploy, all part of the excitement, videotaping her
without her knowing
what they were gonna do to her.
Yeah,
so sick.
Hey, look, it's Cassie.
Hey, look, I don't know.
Hello, Cassie. I'm getting you on tape, okay? Say hi, please. Okay, see ya.
And then around noon that day, both Brian and Tori were skipping class and talking about their plan. And they seem to be in like the school library or classroom, so they're kind of talking quietly.
Mm-hmm.
And Brian says, it's September 22nd, 2006, and we're skipping our fourth hour. We're writing our plan right now for tonight. And they're both like smiling and laughing during this whole thing. A bit later, Tori says, for you future serial killers watching this tape, I don't know what to say. Good luck with that. And then Brian says, it's really fun.
Even though at that point they hadn't killed anyone and they didn't even go on to be serial killers.
Right. But they literally think that they're like going to be these infamous serial killers that are going to inspire others. And it's so sick.
And then they crack under pressure, and then they obviously needed extra time to build up to what they would do, because I feel like they had a quote unquote perfect opportunity to mark two people off their list, if you will. Like, I don't even want to say it like that because that's just so sickening. But and
yeah,
then
they did.
They chickened out.
Yeah. And they actually then say in the tape at one point, Brian says, we've probably tried like 10 times and they've never been home alone. So, like, they're saying, like, we've tried to kill other people, but it hasn't worked. Mm-hmm. Brian says, we were patient, and now it's going to pay off because our victim is home alone. It all worked out.
Yeah.
And then he says, and this is, like, pisses me off, is the sickest thing. He says, I'm sorry, Cassie's family, but she had to be number one. We had to stick with the plan, and she's perfect, so she's going to die. And just the way they're talking about this also casually, when we know that, like, this was an actual plan, not just them talking out of their ass, like, they had actually planned this, is so sick.
And then to go on and actually murder her when, like, literally she was just doing something out of the kindness of her heart.
Mm-hmm. And then we get a little bit more of an idea into, like, why at least Brian wanted to do this. So he says, I've always wanted to make my mark on the world and stuff, and this is a good way to do it. Combine my love of horror movies with my love of wanting to be popular. You know, like, everyone knows my name.
Why don't you do something good?
Mm-hmm. Like, there's plenty of things you could do that are positive for people to know your name.
You're not going to be popular just because you go and murder a bunch of people.
No.
I mean, no. I couldn't even, and this is probably just me having a bad memory, but I couldn't even tell you the two guys who were involved in Columbine. Couldn't even tell you their fucking names. You know why? Because I don't give a fuck what their fucking names are, because, like I said, they're cowards.
Yeah.
So
100%.
It's that doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. At one point, a classmate comes up to talk to them and asks Brian if he's playing soccer this year. And Brian responds by saying, nah, I decided to not play soccer this year. I have more important things to do. And he's kind of, like, laughing and trying to be, like, smug because...
Yeah, like going to prison.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking loser. Sorry, I'm just...
No, I know. And you can also... This is another part that, like, you can tell how cool they think they are. Tori says, giving you the right to copy me in a character that looks like me. Because I know in Hollywood, they usually have people complain. They can't have people making the real thing. I don't care. It's my body. I want it to look just like me. And then Brian's like, well said. I hear ya. I'm the same way.
Whatever. Shut up.
Yeah. So they're continuing to write out these scenarios of what might happen. And then later that night, before the murder, they're heard talking about their plan further, saying that they staked out the house and that they're going to kill both Cassie and Matt.
We're here in his car. The time is 9:50, September 22nd, 2006. Unfortunately, we have the grueling task of killing our two friends. And they are right in that house just down the street.
We just talked to them. We were there for an hour. But
we checked out the whole house. We know there's lots of doors. There's lots of places to hide. I locked the back doors, so it's all locked. Now we just gotta wait. And we're really nervous right now, but, you know, we're ready.
We're listening to the greatest rock band
ever. We've waited for this for a long time.
Pink Floyd. Before we commit the ultimate crime of murder.
We waited for this for a long time.
A long time.
We'll stay tuned.
So this was not long before they snuck back into the house. And then the next part of the tapes is footage right after the murder reacting to what they did.
Also, like, poor Matt, you know, obviously, like, he's lost his girlfriend. He probably has just a
trauma.
Yeah, like a trove of guilt. And then to also have, like, that fear of that almost was me.
Yeah. And by your friend.
By your fucking friend that you hung out with that next day.
Yeah. So I'm going to play the audio from this right after, but then I'll also kind of talk through it.
Okay.
Just killed Cassie. We just left her house. This is not a fucking joke.
I'm shaking.
I stabbed her in the throat and I saw her lifeless body just disappear. Dude, I just killed Cassie. Oh, fuck. That felt like it wasn't even real. I mean, it went by so fast.
Shut the fuck up. We gotta get our act straight.
It's okay. Okay. We'll let's go ahead and move tickets now.
Okay.
Come on. Goodbye.
No.
Goodbye.
So as you just heard, Brian says, "Just killed Cassie. We just left her house. This is not a fucking joke." And then Tori says, "I'm shaking." And Brian says, "I stabbed her in the throat and I saw her lifeless body. It just disappeared. Dude, I just killed Cassie." Brian says, "That felt like it wasn't even real. I mean, it went by so fast." And then Tori says, "Shut the fuck up. We got to get our act straight." Brian says, "It's okay. We'll just buy movie tickets now."
Okay.
Yeah. Like, you just murdered somebody.
Yeah, their adrenaline is like through the fucking ceiling. That's why.
Yeah.
So they're just like talking out of their asses and all hyped up and.
Yeah.
Ugh.
No. So on September 27th, 2006, 5 days after the murder, Brian Draper and Tori Adamczyk were arrested and charged with first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. While they both blamed the other and said that they were not involved in the planning of the murder, the videotapes pretty much implicated them both in not only committing the murder, but planning it.
Yeah, they both were premeditating.
Mm-hmm.
Murdering someone.
Mm-hmm. Tori, to this day, maintains his innocence in the actual murder, saying he was simply, quote unquote, role playing and was just planning to scare Cassie.
No. Bullshit.
Yeah. And we'll talk about in a second about how some of the evidence that the ME talks about in the trial proves that he also actively stabbed her.
Yeah.
Brian did admit to stabbing her and said that Tori stabbed her as well. The boys were tried separately. In both trials, the prosecution used the tapes as evidence against them, and they were each still trying to blame each other for the murder. The ME testified that there were two different knives used in the murder. So one was a serrated knife and one was a non-serrated knife. And a friend who helped them purchase the knives months earlier, who obviously had no clue that this was what was going to happen, he testified and said that Tori had been the one purchasing the non-serrated knife and Brian had purchased the serrated knife. And both of these were used to stab Cassie.
Right.
And the ME testified that the serrated knife was responsible for the majority of the stab wounds. So the majority of the 30 were from Brian, but one of the fatal stab wounds that is likely the one that killed Cassie, that was to her heart, was done by the non-serrated knife, meaning Tori had been the one that executed that blow.
Right.
So they were both implicated in the murders and they were both convicted. So they were both convicted of first degree murder, and for that they received a mandatory sentence of life without parole. They were also both convicted of conspiracy to commit murder and for that got a sentence of 30 years to life. Over 3 years after their conviction, both Tori and Brian's attorneys filed appeals with the Idaho Supreme Court. Brian was seeking to have his conviction vacated or to have his sentence changed to a limited life sentence, which would allow him to seek parole after 30 years.
No.
The Supreme Court did end up vacating his conviction on the conspiracy charge, saying that jurors were given improper instructions on that charge, but they just affirmed his conviction for the first-degree murder charge and confirmed his sentence of life without parole. Tori has continued to appeal all the way up through, like, this year. In 2015, he gained a hearing for post-conviction relief, claiming that testimony from character witnesses could have changed the outcome of his sentencing, but that his former attorney chose to not call on these witnesses during trial. His request was denied, which he then appealed, and then that appeal was denied by the Idaho Supreme Court. He then submitted a writ of habeas corpus in 2018, which is basically like an appeal to the appeal. In very, very simple terms. Obviously, that's not all it is. But he argued that he should be entitled to a new sentencing hearing in light of a U.S. Supreme Court case called Miller versus Alabama 567 U.S., which was a case in which the Supreme Court ruled that mandatory life sentences without parole are unconstitutional for juvenile offenders. So he's saying he was a juvenile at the time and he got a mandatory sentence of life without parole. But this new court case with the Supreme Court had the outcome of saying that was unconstitutional. So he's trying to get a new sentencing.
What's unconstitutional is that you took an innocent life and yeah. therefore you get no special treatment, no special circumstances. Everything mm-hmm. you planned to do and did was on video and
you did this. You yeah.
Yeah.
The judge denied the writ in 2019. Tory appealed this decision in February 2022, but then in March, the appeal was denied and his sentence was upheld. So there's no other news about anything he's done since then, but it does seem like he's going to continue to appeal until he literally has no other options. Mm. 15 years after the murder, Brian did an interview from prison, and in it he said, quote, "I felt like a nobody, and I felt like I'd be somebody if I did something big and bad."
Shut up. Mm-hmm. Just shut up.
I know.
Do something good. Make yeah, a difference.
There's so many positive things you could do to get your name known, to be recognized. Yeah. Both Brian and Tory are currently serving their life sentences at the Idaho State Correctional Institution in, I don't know if it's Ada County or Ada County, in Idaho.
Yeah.
They will remain there for the rest of their lives. It does not seem like any appeals will be successful.
Yeah, I can't even imagine that. They were 16 and 17, you said?
They were 16, both 16.
Both 16, okay. So definitely of age to know better.
Yeah, and like the tapes and their planning of it make it clear that like they knew what they were doing. They're not just innocent kids that like got caught up in something or whatever right. they want to try to argue. Like they knew what they were doing.
The intent was there. They followed through with it.
Yeah.
And yep. and then laughed about it after.
Yep. In 2010, Cassie's family filed a civil suit against the Pocatello School District, claiming that that school authorities were negligent and should have known that Brian and Tory posed a threat to others. However, a civil court and Idaho Supreme Court dismissed the case, saying the boys' actions were unforeseeable. And yeah. even though I feel bad for Cassie's family and like want them to get all of the justice, yeah. I do think that in this case, you know, how would the school district have known?
Right. I mean, you can tell when a child is troubled, but you can never anticipate them doing something as horrific as this.
No, and especially when they're 16 years old and I feel like they can be manipulative in their words and their mm-hmm. actions. So they could hide this, obviously. There were yeah. plenty of people who were friends with them that had no clue that this was going to happen.
And then didn't you say like one of them or maybe both of them like played sports?
Yeah.
And so it's not like, you know, in a lot of these cases where you're like the weird trench coat wearing kid that goes, yeah. you know, like
yeah.
you were a regular, seemingly regular kid, played sports. Like people obviously knew
yeah.
who you were if you were playing yeah. sports for the school. So don't act like you were, you know, the super shy, weird kid that like just wanted to get noticed for yeah. something.
No,
like,
not at all. After Tory and Brian's convictions, Cassie's mother, Anna, said, quote, "I'm just happy my baby got her justice."
Yeah.
Cassie had so much life ahead of her. She was smart, a straight-A student who had dreams of going to college. Mm. She was kind and loving. Everyone was friends with her. And she had a bright future ahead of her that was cut short for absolutely no reason.
Yep.
But that is the murder of Cassie Jo Stoddart. It's known infamously as the Scream Murder, but let's not forget Cassie's name because she is the important one here.
That's right. That's right.
That's all I have for you guys today. I hope you all have a fun and safe Halloween. Thank you for listening, and until next time, keep it human.